Welcome to Design Philosophies, a peripatetic lecture series for publication design. As you know, I'm Mia Cinelli, and I'm serving as the interviewer for this series, where I'll be speaking with artists and designers I know on their design philosophies, career experience, and insight on what they wish they'd known earlier. Worth noting, I'm not a professional podcast editor, and I haven't done this before, so it won't be perfect, but I hope it's helpful. As you listen, please get away from your screen and computer. Walk around. Take a short jaunt around your neighborhood. Do some yoga or organize your room. This series is best listened to when you're moving around and engaging your body. We spend a lot of time in front of our screens, and the best thing we can do is make sure we're spending some time away so we can prevent eye strain and avoid digital burnout. The second interview of this series features my friend Derek Moore. I have to be honest here. I don't actually remember our first meeting whatsoever, but I remember our consequent meetings well. Derek and I went to college together at Northern Michigan University School of Art and Design, so we saw each other every day in class and even worked just down the hall from each other at our first graphic design jobs as in-house designers for different departments within our university. Derek has always had a pointed sense of humor, a love of hockey, and a great attention for detail. As a developer and designer, Derek has a lot of insight, and it was a delight to catch up with him. This interview has been lightly edited for clarity and length. So I do want to start by asking, could you please tell me your name, your age, and where you live?
Absolutely. I am Derek Moore. I am 31 and a half years old, and I live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, my hometown.
Oh, how about that? I forgot you were in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, I slipped into that Uper accent really quickly, and a lot of people didn't realize it.
That's fantastic. So as a general question, how did you get into art and design?
Mine was more from, life. I did all the usual things, but I always had a drawing board around, and I wouldn't even say I was that good at it. I just really enjoyed making the drawing. There was just something. I remember at one point even going through a tracing paper. I just liked anything of making stuff. And I remember actually taking one. We have a little technical school in town that you can take classes at high school. Did one class in graphic design and hated it. Hated it. And thought there's no way I could ever make a career out of that. So when I wanted to be a video editor and took a design class, I was really surprised to find this is actually really enjoyable. Moving type, they didn't tell me anything about moving type around. They didn't give me anything on layouts and grid structure. I mean, they only had, an hour or so, but yeah, I was completely blown away. And it was honestly that first class, I don't remember if we were in it together or not, but that one class was enough to be this is something I can do day in, day out, all the time.
Awesome. On that note, would you be willing to tell me a little bit about where you've worked or where you currently work?
Ooh, yeah, I didn't get into the agency world right away. I tried, but I had a little bit of refining to work on still. I didn't have a great direction post-college, so I kind of had a couple different in-house jobs up until my first agency job at 27. And then I stayed there for a bit, and I'd always kind of had this one agency in mind. It's called Mighty in the Midwest. I had always had that as an end goal, and I actually, after learning to develop the other half of my palette, which was the web development, I did finally apply and get in. So that's my current employer. And they're a great agency. It is day in, day out. I don't really know what I'm going to be doing to start the week. It's high end. It's very, very detail focused, very little oh, we'll worry about that later. It's a really disciplined, but multifaceted group of people. I don't know. They're, You know, when like you're on that team that just like works fluently, I feel like that is my current spot here. And
Mighty. That's really great to hear. Who you work with makes an enormous difference.
It really does.
Wow. Can you tell me a little bit more about what the firm does or what kind of like projects they tackle, how large the firm is?
We're on the smaller end of design firms, at least in Grand Rapids area, but our clientele is getting more focused into like the furniture. I mean, Grand Rapids has no shortage of furniture interests. And so the industry has a lot of different competition. We have a few. We're also getting big into the conservation aspect of things. One of my most entertaining builds this year was working for an environmental engineering company that was kind of going from zero web presence to all of it.
Wow.
And we got to kind of hold their hand on that. And I mean, having those type of clientele, like the clientele that is like actually like doing something you care about, is like a huge, huge, huge thing. So I think we're aiming to pick up more of that, more of like we did during this COVID thing, we actually had a emergency ventilator idea come through our pipeline that we were able to help build a site for over the span of a week, which that was an interesting week. There's been no shortage of like interesting projects coming through. Yeah, it's a good mix of very large, very caring clients. They are not getting their site and not looking at it ever again. They're working on it. We're making sure it's usable. It's a good mix that he's found.
That's great. I'm really happy to hear that you've landed in a spot that you really like and that you're doing work you care about. That's really important. And that's like that feels so like serendipitous.
Yeah. It changes everything on your like day-to-day like happiness, really. Like it's not that lame. Like I don't feel like I work a day. I work out of control. Like I'm so tired the end of most days. It's so hard to like switch that mindset around so many times, but I can't imagine staying entertained any other way. Like I can't, I mean, we picked this field for a reason, right?
Yeah, we really did. As an aside, before I launch into the next question, it was years ago and I was working. I was like making sculpture, something really time intensive and labor intensive. And I had been in the studio like all day, and a colleague of mine who did not work in the arts, like I showed up, like I'm walking back to my office carrying all this stuff, and I've been in the middle of designing and making all day, and this person said, wow, it must be so much fun, like a labor of love. And I was like, it's, you know what, I enjoy it, but I don't know if I qualify this as fun. This is work. Like this is research. Like this stuff has to get made. Like I don't just wake up in the morning like sunshine and lollipops and go, oh, I get to design today. Like it's great.
Yeah,
I love
it. Throw on your floral apron and spin into the kitchen.
Right? Like it's not a Disney movie. Like it's really excellent, and I love the work, and you love the work. We wouldn't do it if we didn't. It wouldn't be worth it if we didn't love it. But I think that's a really important point to make, that it can be enjoyable and it can be fulfilling and it can be worthwhile, but it doesn't make it any less labor, any less work.
Yeah, it's still definitely work, and I think like landing in a place you enjoy is still like, it's gonna be work. Like other people want that job too. It's just always work. I didn't realize there wasn't a spot where you hit it and then you're just done. Like it's just each week seems to be like, wow, I really thought we were kind of coming around, but I guess, all right, more.
There's always more. There's always something.
Yeah.
Would you tell me, do you feel your identity or your upbringing informs the work that you make? And if so, how?
I think anyone's identity is kind of going to influence their work subconsciously. I don't think mine manifested in like a visual style, more or less. I think I fell into the coding aspect of design because of like personal preferences. Like I just happened to kind of be one of those people that liked to be on the computer. I didn't like having texture on my hand. I hated the painting and drawing courses that we had to take. And I even liked to draw. I don't like the feeling on my hand. I like nice structured. I liked to watch something go from nothing and then build literally just like something. Like this site that like, you know, scrolls and animates as it goes down was just a blank, gross HTML file when I started. and now like look at this thing. And like, I can, you know, ask that person over there to look at it on their phone and it'll look a little bit different because I format like that part was much more of a, I think that was kind of born out of the identity of like, I just liked to make things. I didn't feel this like lifelong philosophy need to pour out of me. I just felt the need to like create things and like do it.
Yeah. Do you think of yourself as like a problem solver? Like, is it both like the urgency to make something, but is it also like the urgency of figuring it out? Like, here are the pieces and here's the problem that I'm solving. Like, do you feel like that's a part of your process?
Yeah, it definitely helps. Like, having a real world, like working on the site, like on production sites themselves is a really good motivator that you're doing a real job. You know, you can make all these mockups locally and test stuff and run it and it's fun, but you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But yeah, having that focus of having it be like a real thing, I guess I feel like I'm helping somebody more, and I don't know if that drives, I think it does subconsciously drive it more. Yeah. Cause yeah. You can feel like, well, maybe this, you know, bar that I did the thing for is gonna now get a little bit more revenue cause more people can find it. And like, it's fun to have that, I guess. I don't know that really answered any of what you were asking.
No, I think it does. But the next question I have maybe even more pointed in that way, which is,
okay,
what do you hope your work does in the world?
I just like it to be more like, just to make things a little more efficient. Like I enjoy it when people are just trying to help. Like, I have the general mindset of like, I think most people are, you know, trying, like most, not everyone, but most people are trying to help. Yeah. That's really all I kind of want to like try and help. It's helpful to know that like they had something and they just thought like, I just can't figure it out. I don't know the code. Everything seems so like scary when you think about like your website, like going down, like there's a certain number of errors that it could be. And, you know, once you've memorized a few error codes and somebody says it's down, you have already kind of a lead of where to go. And I guess that's that the desire to help is most of it.
That's really wonderful. Thanks for sharing that with me.
It's like things I haven't really like externalized. I try to come in fresh. So I'm kind of tripping over it as it comes out of my mind. Sorry.
You're doing great. You're doing fantastic. No, I think, you know, I'm excited about off the cuff answers because my hope is that this reads like a conversation, you know, which of course it is. Not everything is always prepackaged. And I think a lot of us, you know, as designers who are still, you know, relatively young in our careers are still figuring things out and we are still parsing out, you know, how we feel about things as we're doing it. And it does like our ideas about design grow and change. We aren't the same designers we were 10 years ago. So the idea is we have the skills, we have the routes we want to go. You know, I think we're just the more, you know, developed versions of ourselves. Like, I think the kernel of our practices was there, you know, but now what that's kind of grown into is a totally different thing.
That's a good way to put that, because it wasn't the Photoshop classes, it wasn't the illustration that like made me want to design. It was actually the book layout.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, or like, there was a lot of info and a lot of spot. Like, I don't know if you took that class with Shrav or not, but there was a book layout, a book project we had to do.
Yep.
And we had to do a 15 spread layout. And I was having so much fun that I ended up doing 45 and I just finished the book. I read the whole, it was a Shakespeare book, and I ended up reading the book because, you know, you're laying the type out, and I was having so much fun with it. And so, yeah, that kernel of like, well, there was a lot of just, you know, plain, boring looking type. And I just wanted to organize it. I didn't want to make it super colorful. I didn't want it to be, you know, like the most, I just wanted it to be organized.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That kernel, you're right. I hadn't thought of it that way before.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, the folks we were in school with and like the directions that they were going in or the things they were interested in or the kind of general mindset that they had. And now seeing people in their careers, you know, all this time later and saying, oh yeah, you still have that thread through your work, or you still have that, you know, design sensibility that makes you, you. Like, I feel like if I had a whole bunch of work in a lineup, I feel like I could pick out your work. Like, I feel like I would know, like, this is Derek's work. Like, it's so clean. It's so considered, you know, like, and I think that you've always had that quality of like detail and order for as long as I've known you.
I've tried. I've been intentionally trying to add textures lately on Dribbble just to try to like give myself a new style that wasn't so predictable, I guess.
So with like thinking about this, do you have, or what is your philosophy towards art and design?
I remember having a conversation with an older creative developer about that. It was when I was really realizing I wanted to kind of dangle that line. I love design, but I also really love to code. I couldn't pick one. Mm-hmm. And I decided I was going to like dangle that line. And I remember telling him, like, it feels kind of like balancing philosophy and science. Like, I like design, but it's a lot of, you know, you have your predispositions, you know which types work together, you know all of these things, and you can argue, honestly, even for fun, I could argue for like an hour of whether something should be sans serif or serif, because, you know, there's just... in a way, there isn't an exact right answer. There's a practice that is correct, but there was a science that I fell more into with development where like it was more like, no, this is, it was less talking and more doing. Mm. And that was kind of what I started to gravitate towards. Like, I enjoyed making mock-ups. I enjoyed presenting them, and I don't enjoy it nearly as much as making that final product, having my hands in there doing like the work to just like put it up. I fell less into philosophy and more into science, I guess I would say, in my design. I wanted to do more than think. I felt at the time I was at a place where I felt there was a little too much philosophy happening and not enough science. Like there's just too much like, what if we did this? What if we did this? Like, cool, but like we actually have to do something.
Yeah,
like we can think about it on a whiteboard for 2 weeks if we want, but we can also like think about it for a few days, have a good direction, and work off of it from there.
Got it. And okay. So it's about taking the action.
Correct.
Not just the thinking, but the doing.
Yeah, there's a hard complacency that happens a lot for me, where like I'll just sit and like, well, this direction too, and you know, you. Everyone's been in there where you know all these ways you could go, and you sit and think about it for so long. And after a while, it's been a couple hours and you haven't really done anything. You've just thought all these things that you could have done. And that happens to me so often where it becomes more in like, I need to kind of come with a direction. Like once I've got an idea, like this will work in some way. At least start like doing something, and then there's always the opportunity to stop completely.
Yep.
But at least you're like moving forward, you're doing work, you're putting work into a portfolio that you can take a screenshot of and reference later, and hopefully like say like, yeah, oh, I remember that. I really learned a lot from that.
Yes. Pedagogically, I might call this thinking through making, which is, of course, like as you're making something, okay, you're thinking through it, which is different from what I have kind of called and got stuck in grad school, which is called the research spiral, where you're reading about stuff and you're thinking about stuff. And then you found like some extra resource and some historic source and like someone has done some study. And so you've read a 30-page paper in the library, and then you've been looking at stuff for a week and you haven't made anything. You haven't done anything. And so the best way to think through the thing you're making is to start making it, because as you iterate, as you visually think through, as you try something or test something, then you know if it's working, because you can think about it till the cows come.
Yeah.
But thinking about it is great, but only until you actually do it will you know.
And you can't think of every issue you're going to run into through the layout until you start working on it. Eventually it's going to be like, I really didn't realize that this gallery wasn't going to like scale down at mobile that well. Like, I really should have thought of this. Well, maybe I shouldn't do it. Like, you know, it surfaces new things you didn't think about. And so like, you wouldn't have known that if you had just sat and thought about what the gallery could possibly do. You like, you only surfaced it when you realize, we got a problem.
Yep. I think that's a nice philosophy. Like, I think that general like way of thinking and taking action and like thinking about you know, like theory and practice next to each other, and how you work with them, I think is really important and lovely. And I think something that all designers kind of reckon with is in our process of where do we spend our time, and how do we inform our decisions, and how can we get stuck, you know, pairing those things again, or pitting those things against each other. So that, thanks for sharing that. Could you tell me about some of the best art and design you've ever encountered and some of the worst you've ever encountered?
Oh man. There is one thing that sticks out, like, more whenever I think of like good modern design. I actually, there's this, she's not active on Dribbble much anymore. I don't know if you ever followed Bethany Heck. I don't think, man, maybe 2015, 16, 17 or so. I don't know that I saw like better stuff come out of stuff. Like, she was producing like web, she was working at like a higher end agency, but also just putting stuff out and doing her own person. It like became a real big thing for me to be like, oh, so you can kind of balance it. You can do like a few different things, and then you're getting inspiration from all of them. But hers was at such an insanely talented level. I still don't know. I'm wondering if maybe she's just less active because like it was like a, you know, a brain explosion and just like everything got out digitally that she could. And now she's just sitting as a vegetable somewhere. I mean, it like stuff I couldn't, like, I would highly encourage, look up Bethany Heck on Dribbble. She just, when I think of great design, that's where my brain immediately goes. Awesome. And it has for like 4 years now.
Wow. Cool.
The worst though, man, that's opening up for so much design. Oh, but you know what? There is one that sticks out to me recently. Staples. Did you see the Staples rebrand?
Yep.
Horrifying.
What are they doing?
It's, I mean, I don't see them as like somewhere that was ever like a leader in anything, but that new logo is horrifying. Like, the first one, literally, they played into the staple, like, okay, cool, it's a little gimmicky, but you know, it works. And you'd think if they were going to do something, they would go to the sans serif movement that everyone else is doing, the super geometric sans. And then they just like decided to take up all of the space, like a completely unnecessary amount of space, and stick like an unbent staple right in the front of it. Like, almost like it was the joke layout that where somebody put it on the artboard, like, yeah, this is just kind of like some extra fluff, you know, so our other ones look better.
Throw one in. We need a dozen. Yeah. Put one here.
They'll never pick that one.
Yeah, always.
So, I honest, that one is shockingly bad. Terrible.
Yeah.
That would be my pick. I take it back. I do have an example.
That was excellent. No, I totally can see that happening, of where they have a gazillion logos. They're trying to fill the page. You know, it's not even. They throw one more in, so there's some symmetry. And then, yeah, someone goes, how about that one? And I can just imagine the design team going, oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Please. How about any of these other 1,000 we've designed for you? Not this one.
I did that one time in college working for... what was that office I had that was a little bit further from yours? It was the dining services designers that I was doing with Andy and stuff. We had to brand a coffee shop, and I put in a photo, like a general photo of a coffee cup from the top, and wrote with, like, I think Myriad was the system default at the time.
Yeah.
And so in just Myriad Pro wrote, like, I don't even remember the name of the shop, but like had that just over top of this like regular photo. And my boss said, like, yeah, they really, like, when she came back with me, like, yeah, they kind of liked that one. It's like, I didn't, that's a joke. Like, I never did it again. Like, she was like, you know, like, they, like, so, like, a lesson learned, like, if you put it in, they don't know, like, no one can tell if it's a design joke. That's, like, why would they know?
Nope.
Yeah, I remember doing almost exactly, I've had that scenario. I'm like, oh, no, please don't. That poor Staples designer that didn't learn that lesson in college.
You know, it happens. Everyone's been there. Everyone has been there. And client work is hard, you know, like it's such a motivation anytime you're working with someone to try and match expectations with expertise, with, you know, trying to convince someone, you know, and trying to explain like why these choices have been made and why this choice makes sense and why we can't slide into this other option, you know, like that is, I think, a really challenging part and something that you only learn by doing and by making a lot of mistakes doing it.
The mistakes, for sure. And like, you've only ever spent time learning your craft coming up through school. Like, you know, for good reason, you need to sit and practice your craft. But then there's that, yeah, you have to learn like how to communicate your craft, which is just something no one really tells you. Like, by the way, you're going to be showing this only to people that don't know design.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to have an ally in that room unless your director happens to also be there. Like, this is you learning to talk about design to non-designers.
Yeah.
Who also have a budget and know like the equation that works, like the bare minimum to like get it going, and like you have to convince them that like it's worth it to do these extra frills for your design.
Yeah.
In their mind.
Yeah. And everyone comes with a set of preferences and ideas and opinions, which is is hard, you know, because then you're trying to kind of figure out how to navigate that relationship or those relationships or those expectations. If someone says, well, I like blue, right? And that, and that's what they come to the conversation yep. with. And so then you have to kind of figure out, okay, what can I do with
this? Yep. Yep. Or that's just not quite the right blue. Like, do you have any terms to guide that in the right direction, or is it just wrong? Too light, too dark, too saturated, anything?
So the last question, the last official question that I have listed is very pertinent to this conversation, which is, what do you wish you knew earlier in your career?
Meetings. I wish I would have known design was going to be meetings. Day in, day out. Like, you are like constantly presenting and defending your stuff, or just in a meeting. Like, just, I didn't realize how much of the real world was meetings. Learning to communicate was one that was a really, I would say, still one I have to actively try to like work on, especially like when you're, you know, you spend all day on a layout, you're in and out with like your artboard, or, you know, your, like for me, my IDE with my code editor, you're trying to go from like that world into all of a sudden like kind of like these other people that are sitting around the table waiting to hear what you've done. And you have to now like try to speak to humans after just staring so intently for 7-8 hours. Like, that's a skill it's an invaluable one that I've seen people that are good at it. They do well. Like, they're usually the ones that are in like a director role that I kind of always kind of admire. Like, man, I wish I could just like kind of speak in the room the way that they do, you know. But, you know, they're asking so many questions that we hadn't really thought of, and they're getting on a rabbit hole that I wasn't prepared for, and it's just handling it. Like, communication outside, like, communication is just a very, very tough one. Honestly, though, like, more, like, I would go back to that first one of just, it's work. Like, I wish somebody would have told me, even though you enjoy this, it's work. Like, it doesn't mean, like we were saying earlier, it doesn't mean you just kind of wake up and birds kind of pull the covers off you and you stretch, you know, and kind of like, I get to make art today. It's still like, it's still just so much, like, it's, you're pouring everything into it. It's still just like, it is going to be work. After 5 years, it's going to be work. After 10, it's going to be work. Maybe after like 30, it's not, but I mean, I haven't hit 30 years of working, but it definitely would have been good to know. It doesn't get easier after college. There's just more people that want your job.
Yep.
I mean, it wouldn't have swayed me from the field either if I had known that, I don't think. I don't think I would have suddenly been like, oh, wait, this is going to be hard. I don't want to do that. Like, I think if you're in school to be a designer, you're aware that it's going to be hard at a certain level. Just, I would have liked to have been more aware of what was going to be hard. Not picking the color schemes, not picking the, you know, type family, not all of the stuff. That's easy. You know, you've done it your entire career. That, it turns out, that's the easy part. The hard part is then convincing everyone else that's yours. The hard part is then coming up with one that you, when you just really have an off day, coming up with a new scenario that might have to be in, coming up with elements that you didn't design and you have to make something look good with.
Yeah.
Like there's just a never ending amount of work. And if you want to stay in, you just kind of got to keep working.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we talk about, you know, the phrase creative practice, which I don't think I heard until I was in grad school. You know, I don't think that's a phrase we used when we were in college, but we think about a practice, like a medical practice, which is just, you have to keep doing it all the time.
Yeah.
It's something that you do by practicing, and I don't think anyone ever fully arrives. I think everyone is just like continuing to learn. It's not like you arrive somewhere and you look around and you go, yes, I've done it. It's mostly arriving somewhere, looking at the view and then looking behind you and going, oh wait, there's more to climb. There's still so much here. There's so much to do and to learn. And once you learn a certain amount, you go, oh, there's all this other stuff I don't know. Oh shoot. I've got to get over there. I've got to learn that.
I think it's good to look at your old stuff too, because I've had that where I've been looking and been like, this never ends. Like this mountain is like a never ending. I never know enough technologies. I never have like thought through every screen of every layout. I get to that, like, you almost hit that imposter syndrome. And then you look at a project you did 3 years ago and you think, why did I even show that to someone? Like, I can't believe, like, look at the obvious mistake. Like, this is so, like, why does this load so slowly? Like, why didn't I like preload that element? Like, you see that and you're like, oh yeah, no, I guess I did. I guess I did pick up a few things along the way. And then you get to compare that and be like, you know, I guess I am kind of going somewhere. And you definitely need that like encouraging boost every so often. Cause man, like having your nose down and just working gets a little overwhelming if you don't like take that perspective every so often.
Yeah.
I think you need both the perspective of looking up and looking back. Like just always be, perspective has gotten very big for me lately.
Yeah. You know, I think that's really important. I think that's, my hope is that that's hopeful and helpful for young, you know, designers, new designers and artists to hear, to have that perspective, is that you are somewhere and you've been somewhere before and you're headed somewhere. And that's, I think having that kind of perspective and having like grace and patience with yourself also, I think is really important, because we are all learning and we not all of our work is going to be perfect all the time. I've been trying to make a point of telling my students, like, I make a lot of bad work en route to good. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of bad stuff. I still make a lot of bad stuff, which you have to do in order to get to something that makes any sense.
That's entirely true.
And totally normal. And there is no human being that I know of that has had nothing but hits in their career, you know, that has never done anything but really beautiful work. And I think a lot of what they're seeing is always the results. They're seeing things on Instagram, they're seeing things on Pinterest, seeing things, you know, that show up, and it's all this beautiful work. But all that beautiful work is the result of toil. It's the result of failure. It's the result of looking at 3 years ago work and going, oh no, oh, why did I do that, right? And so,
and there were 18 screens that you deleted to get to that Instagram post. And then, like, I'm sure you've been in it too, and like I remember really, I wish not understanding this as a younger person, like when you see those mistakes and not realizing not everyone is noticing the same thing that you are. Like I remember a title that I put on something, and like, oh man, that printing was so bad, I was so mad, I never like flipped it upside down to space it. And like, it just never, even as snobby as we were as designers, like just like nobody even mentioned it. Like it just, like, it's not just like the mistakes that you spot aren't necessary. I mean, fix mistakes by all means, but like not every tiny thing is going to be able to get corrected, and that's going to be fine. Like eventually, yeah, you got to put something out there. You can't sit and millimeter, like shave off all of the sides of this work, like put it out. Like if it truly was a mistake, you'll realize it before you put it out, hopefully. Definitely put out a few misspellings before, but you know, outside of that.
Message, right? Like every designer has sent something to print or sent something out to the world, and later on you go, oh, that's spelled poorly. Shoot.
Oh, you want to know what my worst one was?
Yeah.
I turned in a mock-up before I was working in CMSs, I was just making HTML mock-ups. And for the copyright, boy, I think this was like 2018, 2013. It was somewhere in 2008. And I remember writing the copyright as copyright 1999 to 2000 late. And I just like wrote that, thought it was funny, like made myself giggle. I just do that throughout the day. I never thought about it again. And it kind of went through all the rungs and eventually, you know, like went to the client and kind of like, what is this copyright? And it kind of went through all the streams and made it all the way back to me and just kind of like, hey, Ed, you know what happened to that copyright? I was like, nope, I don't know what happened to it at all. I didn't, something must have gotten shifted.
That's excellent.
That one, yeah, that was, I felt, I still kind of, good lesson. Definitely check for your mistakes. Definitely fix real mistakes and don't intentionally put them in.
And that, I think, is probably a good place to wrap all of that. Is there anything last minute?
It's a great field. You might be surprised where you end, and not even end, just kind of where you pop up at. Like, I had no intentions of being a web developer. And at this most recent job, I intentionally chose to do code rather than mockups unless needed. Like, it was something I never, ever would have predicted, but I can't see it being more fun. And it's still, I'm still like organizing and designing so much through it. And it's just not in a way that I was aware I could do. Being willing to pivot into something might show you really actually really enjoy it, and like you might have a chance to kind of be a hybrid and kind of, you know, do your own thing and not be what, like, I remember always coming up against that, well, I'm more of a traditional designer. No, be your own designer. Like, do your own thing. Like, there's going to be a new industry in 5-10 years, and they're going to need designers, and there's going to be new products, and there's always a product coming out that needs a designer. Like, there's always going to be a new project. And not being willing to try it because it's not what you're familiar with is a huge loss. Like, sometimes, yeah, just take your head down. Might not be what you know, but just try it. Like, go for it, design it. It might flop. Chances are it will flop. There's a, like, you know, you have to throw so much at the wall before a noodle sticks. And then when it does, man, you're gonna, like, it's so satisfying. And that's that hard work you need to keep, like, staying employed, to keep getting new design jobs, to keep being a practically relevant designer. Work's not over after college. I don't know. I just, like, as I was speaking, I just was having just flashback after flashback of, like, oh, that was tough. Oh, yeah, that was tough. Yeah, man, it's a long road to stay in design. A long and inspiring, worthy road.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Design Philosophies. If you want to learn more about Derek's creative work or his firm, you can look him up online. His name is spelled D-E-R-E-K-M-O-H-R, and he works at Mighty in the Midwest in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Thank you to Derek for being willing to chat about this work we love to do, even if it is work. Stay tuned, and until next time.